KQED.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians, on the web at chcf.org. And URS, a global engineering and construction firm working to improve California's public infrastructure, preserve the state's natural resources, and strengthen the environment. URS.com.
This is the California Report. I'm Scott Schaefer. Coming up, the stakes for comprehensive immigration reform, how a deal could affect workers and growers in California, and how high-tech companies could help seal the deal. Also, it sounds like science fiction, but researchers really are working to bring back extinct animals.
One of the interesting things that you learn very quickly in trying to bring back an extinct species is how much easier it is to keep a species alive than it is to bring back an extinct species.
Also, new hope for Alzheimer's patients, how using music helps transform patients with dementia.
She was the very first person I put the iPod on, and her face lit up. I literally stayed there for 30 minutes watching her, and she started clapping again, and she started rolling herself down the hallways. It gave me chills. It did. It was wonderful to see.
It's the California Report. Next week could, and I'll say it again, could be the week Congress unveils comprehensive immigration reform. California, of course, is home to more than 2 million immigrants who are here illegally, living in the shadows to avoid deportation. And so a deal on immigration would be huge for California, affecting workers, service, and high-tech employers, growers, and families with mixed immigration status. It could also change our state and national politics. And joining us now to talk about all that, two people representing key interest groups in this issue. Barry Bedwell is president of the California Grape and Tree Fruit League. He joins us from our bureau in Fresno. Mr. Bedwell, good to have you with us.
Great to be here, Scott.
And in Los Angeles, Mike Garcia, president of the SEIU United Service Workers West. His union represents more than 40,000 janitors and other service workers in California. Mike Garcia, hello to you as well.
Thank you.
Let me begin by asking each of you, and I'll start with you, Barry Bedwell. What still needs to be worked out? What's the toughest and most important issue that still the details are still being considered and debated?
Well, I think from an agricultural perspective, we have to look at the practicality of immigration reform being a two-pronged approach, dealing with those individuals that are here without documentation, but also creating a very important visa program that needs to really replace the current H-2A program, which we've learned over a number of years is unworkable. And then also, as the general business community has discussed the idea of a cap, how would a potential cap impact agriculture as well?
And Mike Garcia, from a labor perspective, I assume you might agree with some of that, but what else?
On the guest worker program outside of agriculture, the U.S. Chamber and the AFL-CIO and the unions were able to work out an agreement, and they've passed that on to the Congress, who is, I understand, willing to accept that piece of it.
Barry Bedwell, from growers' perspective, what difference will it make to them and also to the migrant workers that you depend on to have this worked out?
Well, I think it's a huge difference in terms of we all understand that we're watching a situation of seeing the labor supply tightening. There's no question about that. And looking at the needs of California agriculture as well as the rest of the nation, we know that for California, for instance, we need something in excess of 440,000 workers. The reality is that we want a situation where people can go home comfortably every evening, feel safe and secure. And the idea of living in the shadow is a very real one. I think more and more the grower community understands that this is a situation that needs to be corrected.
And Mike Garcia, what difference will it make to the employees you work with, janitors and other service workers?
Well, it'll dramatically change their lives, stabilize their very existence, remove the fear element of ICE, what we call ICE raids, and potential loss of jobs and income, broken families, and destroyed lives.
Let me ask you about this path to citizenship, or what critics call amnesty. That seems to be the big or one of the big sticking points. Advocates for immigrants are concerned that that path could become more of an obstacle course. Barry Badwell, I don't know how much of a dog you have in that fight, but what do you think is the right balance to strike?
Well, I think, as it's been said, the last election has consequences. And one of the consequences was, I believe, the idea that the issue of citizenship generally was acted upon by the electorate. Having said that, I think we need to create a system, a fair system, so that the right individuals can move on a pathway to citizenship in a reasonable amount of time. I think it's something that most people would look at now as not a reason for failure. And I am concerned that particularly with some members of Congress, they tend to continue to get hung up on the citizenship issue. And I think we can address it properly by making the right requirements, whether it's background checks, whether it's the whole idea of getting in line in the proper placement. The idea of citizenship is one now that I think is part of the general attitude toward accomplishing immigration reform.
Mike Garcia, from your perspective, the perspective of your union, what would you say is a non-negotiable? What has to be in the final package that comes out of Congress?
No, we have to have citizenship. This, I think, is the number one issue. And I agree with Barry that I think most folks have crossed that hurdle and understand that citizenship is and should be part of the package. It's the right thing to do. It's the fair thing to do. We understand there's a lot of pragmatic issues to address, such as making sure that taxpayers aren't paying for costs or any of the new people coming into the system. But we have to make sure that those that genuinely want to be here and make a life here have a fair opportunity to do so without the overly restrictive fees, penalty, and assessments.
And Barry Badwell, we keep hearing that this is imminent, a deal that is, but if you were a betting man, how would you place the odds right now?
I would say 50-50. Unfortunately, I wish I could be more optimistic, but I think there are some obstacles to overcome. I think there has to be a realization that as we look at the components, particularly of a visa program and the need for once people become legalized in the United States for agriculture, we've known that historically agriculture is a pathway into other occupations. Having said that, and as people move potentially out of agricultural employment, we're going to need potentially more visas as well. So these are all intricacies that I think have to be discussed. The politics are always very difficult, particularly in the House of Representatives. But, at this point in time, I'm probably in the middle.
All right. Barry Badwell, president of the California Grape and Tree Fruit League in Fresno, and Mike Garcia, president of the SEIU United Service Workers West, joining us from Los Angeles. Gentlemen, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
For immigrants, there's a world of difference between picking apples and working for Apple. And as KQED's Arthi Shahani reports, when it comes to immigration reform, Silicon Valley and the Central Valley don't always see eye to eye.
JetLore is a startup in Sunnyvale that uses algorithms to read slang in Facebook posts and Twitter tweets. Two 28-year-olds founded the company, Monsi Medina, a Spaniard who welcomes me into the office with a popular immigrant greeting.
Would you mind taking off the shoes? We actually have a no-shoe policy, but we do have guest slippers.
And co-founder Eldar Sadikov, a Russian who introduces me to their workforce.
Tudor, who's from Romania here. Ignacio, who is actually an American citizen, but his family is from Mexico.
What part of Mexico, Ignacio?
Oh, okay. Michoacan. Medina and Sadikov employ a mini United Nations. They're award-winning authors in artificial intelligence and Stanford University graduates. Despite their brain power, Medina and Sadikov are here as temporary guests. They do not have green cards. That's a problem they share with millions of immigrants who are at the low end of the economic spectrum, the kind of people who do service sector jobs or agricultural work. But Sadikov outright rejects being told he's like the guy who picks grapes.
No, we are not. Obviously, I think I made more impact. I think I did more good things for this country in the way I deserve to be here.
I can take a Silicon Valley PhD or whatever. Who would know a thing about how to prune a grapevine?
Manuel Cunha works in the other valley, the Central Valley, land of grapes, oranges, cotton. Cunha is the director of the Nisei Farmers League and has worked on immigration reform for decades. Cunha recalls a tense moment in 1996. Agriculture and high tech both wanted visas. High tech told Congress their workers are more valuable, and they won lawmakers' support.
And from that point on, that has always said to me that they only worry about them, and they don't worry about the rest of the country.
Cunha says unlike past rounds of immigration reform, this one is distinct because it's trying to be, like the name says, comprehensive. That means building coalitions between ministers, police, restaurants, unions, chambers of commerce. When I ask Cunha if that also means he's reaching out to his neighbors in Silicon Valley, he flips the question.
Why haven't they come to the San Joaquin Valley? Because they're better than us?
Intel Corporation has a different take.
We haven't really coordinated message because it's a different set of issues.
Intel Policy Director Peter Mueller says he hasn't met with farmers because he's busy meeting with other tech companies. The industry that's long resisted politics is finally forming a lobby. Mueller recalls his own tense moment in 2012. Intel wanted visas for Indian and Chinese workers. Their bill won by a landslide in the House, just to get blocked in the Senate.
There were some senators who felt that it was not right to just deal with that one small issue and thought that there were bigger issues in the immigration arena that needed to be dealt with.
Mueller says if Congress wants a big comprehensive bill, it's on Congress to build the bridges.
We're focused on the Immigration Innovation Act, and if the pieces of that that are important to us are included in a broader bill that has other things in it, that's what something we'll be supportive of.
Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren is the lead negotiator for the House on a bipartisan bill. For weeks, we tried to get Lofgren to sit down for an interview, and her staff said she's just too busy. But her colleague from Illinois, Congressman Luis Gutierrez, jumped on the phone and recited his message to her constituents in Silicon Valley.
I have told them time and time again, until you take the least among you and she or he gets an opportunity, it's going to be broken for everyone.
Gutierrez recently came to the Bay Area specifically to push comprehensive reform, but he didn't meet with any tech companies. He did meet with farm workers, and he said the trip was just too short to fit it all in. Gutierrez is counting on the voting power of Latinos to get the tech lobby in line.
Particularly from the Latino community. People didn't go and vote on November 6th to give one person a leg up over another.
Arguably, it's the Latino vote that put immigration reform on the table right after the elections. And arguably, as Gutierrez notes, it's the tech companies and the money and jobs they're promising that'll win over reluctant lawmakers.
There will not be a problem with the Congress on the Republican and Democratic side providing tens of thousands of visas for the high-tech industry.
And do you ever get the pushback of, hey, don't strangle my dreams because you want me as some piece in your chess game?
Yeah, I get that. But I have to tell you, we're going to do this for everyone.
To do this for everyone, Silicon Valley and the Central Valley will have to pool their economic and electoral power. And that might take a conversation. For the California Report, I'm Aarti Shahani.
It's been 4,500 years, give or take a few weeks, since herds of woolly mammoth roamed the earth, and passenger pigeons have been gone for a century. Now, it may seem far-fetched, but a group of biologists and genetic scientists in California is working to bring them back. Deirdre Kennedy reports on a project to help extinct animals make a comeback.
The first thing you need to know is that dinosaurs are off the menu. That's because there's no DNA in dinosaur fossils, and without DNA, well, as one genetic scientist says, you can't clone from stone.
First, you have to sequence the genome, and somewhere in there are the genes.
At a recent TEDx conference, evolutionary biologist Beth Shapiro boiled down the complex process of cloning a woolly mammoth. It starts with a genetic blueprint.
Then we have to get these genomes onto the chromosomes, because chromosomes are the way that genetic material is carried in the cells. Then we have to get the chromosomes into the nucleus and the nucleus into the cell so they can start to divide. And then we have to get the cell and the embryo into a surrogate mother.
Shapiro and other scientists have hauled tens of thousands of bones from the giant freezer full of mammoth DNA known as the Arctic. Sequencing a genome from a living subject has gotten a lot faster, but there's a huge challenge with extinct animals.
Do you imagine that our own DNA is like a rope or a ribbon? Then the mammoth DNA itself is actually going to be more like confetti that's been run over by a herd of mammoths in the rain.
So, woolly mammoths aren't on the immediate horizon, but Novak and her colleagues at UC Santa Cruz are also working on bringing back the passenger pigeon. Not to be confused with carrier pigeons, those are the ones that delivered messages during wartime. Passenger pigeons were the most numerous birds in North America 200 years ago. There were billions of them. But now you can only find them in special collections, like this one at the California Academy of Sciences in San Francisco. Jack Dumbacker is chairman and curator of the Department of Ornithology and Mammalogy.
So this is our extinct case. If I pull open this drawer here, there's our passenger pigeon.
Dumbacker picks up one of the taxidermied birds and strokes its feathers as he describes its elegant features.
They kind of look like a giant mourning dove. So they're mostly gray above, and they're sort of buffy tan below, and they have a pointed tail. And on the sides of the head, you see this beautiful iridescent purplish glow.
Back in the 1800s, passenger pigeons were thought of as pests or as cheap food. You could buy one for a dime, and people shot them by the millions and billions. The birds that once filled the skies were obliterated in the span of a few decades. Scientists are hoping to bring back the passenger pigeon with some help from its nearest living relative, California's band-tailed pigeon. You've probably heard their call.
You might think it's an owl or something, so it's kind of like, woo, 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 woo.
The idea is to use the band-tailed pigeon to carry passenger pigeon chicks. But you can't introduce DNA into a bird egg, says graduate researcher Ben Novak.
If we disrupt the process of that egg being formed, the egg won't form properly and the embryo won't work.
So Novak and his colleagues want to try a different strategy, to genetically alter band-tailed pigeons with passenger pigeon DNA. Novak says they're still working out the technology. But once they've hatched some passenger pigeon chicks, he's already figured out a way to teach them to sing and to migrate.
The plan is to use pure white homing pigeons and cosmetically color them the same color as a passenger pigeon. And that way your baby passenger pigeon hatches and it sees a pigeon that looks like a passenger pigeon.
It's worked before. Biologists used hand puppets to raise California condor chicks in captivity. Novak's project was created by the San Francisco-based Long Now Foundation. Co-founder Alexander Rose says the Revive and Restore project also aims to help thousands of species from going extinct.
One of the interesting things that you learn very quickly in trying to bring back an extinct species is how much easier it is to keep a species alive than it is to bring back an extinct species. And so, but a lot of the techniques you use for bringing back a species can be used for revitalization.
For now, de-extinction remains closer to the realm of science fiction than reality, but it's launched a sort of space race for biologists. Researchers say even if they don't reach their goal, they will likely develop genetic therapies for human medicine and greatly increase our understanding of the animal world. For the California Report, I'm Deirdre Kennedy.
Hollywood has inspired plenty of writers, from Joan Didion to Harold Robbins and Gore Vidal. Author Matthew Spector didn't have to look far for his inspiration. He grew up in Hollywood with two parents working in and around the film industry. The California Report's book critic Oscar Villalon says Spector's new novel, titled American Dream Machine, goes beyond Hollywood's underbelly of ambition and greed.
Before we get to meet Beau Rosenwald, the giant ball of hunger and drive around which all the characters in the novel American Dream Machine revolve, we first meet his sons and their lifelong friend. It's the early 90s, and Will, Severin, and Nate, the narrator, are coming too after a long night of partying and otherwise indulging in Hollywood privilege. Normally, in this kind of story, this is where we'd expect to see that the children of powerful agents and producers are, inevitably, numbed out, misogynistic, or sociopathic. Instead, author Matthew Spector treats us to a scene of warmth and thoughtfulness. Some joshing about the evening before, and an easy intimacy with each other, and an implicit respect. The young men aren't perfect, but they're far from monsters. Much like the book's central character, they're just trying to figure out who they are and where they're heading. Bo Rosenwald, who is a hard-bitten toad of a man, yet exudes an irresistible charisma and openness, is plagued by his inability to understand who he is. Bo is one of the pioneers of Hollywood, a man who came to town in the 60s as a novice agent, but goes on to help form a company that rivals the studios in its power to make movies and careers. We follow him through those early days of unchallenged white male entitlement, through the fracturing 70s, to the glossy, shallow days of the 80s, into the near present. We witness Bo's triumphs and failures, watch as he suffers terribly, even as he makes others miserable, and root for him to try to arrive at some state of grace in his old age. Along the way, we get an education of how the entertainment industry actually works. Spector, whose father is a talent agent and his mother a screenwriter, was once himself a studio executive and producer. He nails down entertainment's labor aspect, the tedium and long hours, the uncertainty and constant hustling. Through Nate, Bo's life is richly recreated and fully imagined, even as the story segues into the private worlds of the other people within Bo's orbit. With the pliability of his namesake, Philip Roth's trusty narrator, Nathan Zuckerman, Nate effortlessly conjures up the anxieties and the weariness, the joys and the thrills of the other protagonists. Don't be misled. American Dream Machine is not without the trappings of a Tinseltown tale. Amid the wealth, there's drugs, boozing, promiscuity, even bloody violence. But it's not especially about these things. Rather, the story is about love between friends and family and what that demands of us. In this way, Spector has written perhaps the most relatable Hollywood novel yet.
Oscar Villalone is the managing editor of the West Coast literary journal Ziziva. He reviewed American Dream Machine by Matthew Spector. You can read an excerpt at californiareport.org. A new report published this week in the New England Journal of Medicine came to a staggering conclusion. The cost of caring for Americans with dementia will more than double within 3 decades. Treatment of patients with diseases like Alzheimer's can be frustratingly ineffective. But one approach does show hope: music. KPCC's Stephanie O'Neill visited an assisted living facility in Southern California where iPods loaded with customized playlists are used to reach patients with lost memories.
Each afternoon at 4 o'clock, 83-year-old Tom, a retired optical engineer, spends an hour visiting with his wife, Marcy, in her room at the Atherton Baptist Homes Assisted Living Facility in Alhambra, 10 miles east of downtown Los Angeles. So far, 84-year-old Marcy, who suffers from Alzheimer's disease, continues to recognize her husband of 55 years.
She remembers my name. She remembers I'm her husband. She lights up every time she sees me. So all that's good.
Still, Marcy's dementia has stolen away much of her ability to think clearly and to function as she did before the Alzheimer's struck, making communication challenging for the longtime Pasadena couple who opted not to use their last name for this story.
The memory is so short. If I tell her something, she won't remember after several minutes.
But not all is lost. An organization called Music and Memory has provided Marcy and Tom with a new way to connect.
We're going to go with this. You like this.
I like this.
The program helps awaken patients like Marcy to the present moment with help of an iPod customized with some of her favorite music. As the voice of 1950s pop sensation Patti Page fills her headset, Marcy smiles at Tom and sings along to the music, which chases away the dementia-induced stupor that gripped her just minutes earlier. There's peace and goodwill. Dan Cohen is a trained social worker and the founder of Long Island-based Music and Memory, which promotes the use of personalized music to improve the lives of elderly dementia patients. The nonprofit group works by collecting donated iPods and then distributes them to nursing homes that undergo music and memory training. So far, more than 60 in the U.S. and Canada are certified in the program. The Atherton Baptist Homes is one of 7 in California.
You know, it's not a cure for Alzheimer's,
But you are tapping those parts of the brain that are still functional, and you're reaching them sort of by a back door.
Josh Grill agrees. He's an assistant professor of neurology at UCLA's Mary S. Easton Center for Alzheimer's Disease Research, which also collects donated iPods for local nursing homes certified in the Music and Memory program.
In Alzheimer's disease, music may calm the patient, bring back memories that we thought were once lost, and even increase their alertness and their ability to communicate with those around them.
At Atherton Baptist Homes, Jessica Litchfield is among the workers trained in the Music and Memory iPod program. She says she was sold on the idea the first time she witnessed the effect of customized iPod music on a female patient suffering late-stage dementia.
She had stopped, you know, rolling herself in her wheelchair, and she was the very first person I put the iPod on, and her face lit up. I literally stayed there for 30 minutes watching her, and she started clapping again, and she started rolling herself down the hallways. It gave me chills. It did. It was wonderful to see.
Not all patients show such transformations. Most here at Atherton sit in their wheelchairs, eyes closed, seemingly asleep, as they listen to their favorite tunes through headsets. But even that, say those familiar with dementia, is an improvement over the agitation, delusions, and aggression that can often grip those with Alzheimer's disease. Again, UCLA neuroscientist Josh Grill.
There are reports of music decreasing agitation and increasing calming and even alleviating depression in some of these patients. And overall, we think that providing music therapy may improve the quality of life of these residents.
Residents like Atherton's Marcy. The hours she spends each afternoon listening to her iPod with husband Tom seems to calm her, he says, and make her more aware of his presence.
I want to hold your hand.
Yeah.
I love to hold your hand.
I just think it's a blessing to both of us. Because it's something, I'm not a very strong conversationalist. So when we get together, it's something that we can share together. And that brings us a lot of joy.
Music and Memory founder Dan Cohen says his organization is collecting iPod donations to help continue the program's expansion throughout the state and the nation. For the California Report, I'm Stephanie O'Neill.
On Mockingbird Hill, when the sun in the morning peeps over.
And finally, this note, half of all Americans complain about being tired. So next week, we're devoting a whole show to sleep.
You should never, ever wake up feeling tired, right? You don't leave restaurants feeling hungry. You should not wake up tired. You should wake up refreshed. So don't think about the hours of sleep. It's the quality. You should wake up feeling good.
Whether you sleep like a log or toss and turn all night, we want to hear from you. Drop us a line and tell us your story about sleep or sleeplessness. Send email to calreport@kqed.org. Tell us what keeps you up, what helps you sleep, if anything, and how it all affects you and your family. Again, that's calreport@kqed.org. And that's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. We're online at californiareport.org and Facebook, too. Feel free to like us. You can also follow me on Twitter, @ScottSchaefer. Our director is Susie Rocho. The technical producer is Seal Muller. We had additional engineering from Howard Gelman. The online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Guy Marzorati and Gina Shalaba. We had editing help this week from Kat Snow and Julia McAvoy. Our editorial team includes Victoria Malione, Ingrid Becker, Bruce Kuhn, and Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the California Endowment. Health happens with prevention at calendow.org.